Blog Talk Radio and Jay Rosen. Jay, how you doing?
Hi, Dave.
This is Rebooting the News, our weekly podcast, and it's coming to you from two different cities today. I'm in New York. I'm in the studio, and if everything went well, then you'll be hearing me in full live fidelity, and Jay will be coming to you. Jay, do a demo of what you sound like.
I'm coming to you from my hotel room in Austin, Texas at the South by Southwest Festival.
Oh, you're so cool. Everybody that's cool is in South by Southwest this week. Is that true?
Well, almost everybody.
Aw, shucks. That's sweet. Adrian's not there, right, Adrian?
Yeah. My students aren't here, and they're pretty
actually,
cool.
Some of your students are there.
I haven't run into them, but I run into a couple potential students, and that was very cool.
Oh, interesting.
People for next year.
What do you tell them? What do you tell potential students of yours?
I tell them why I started Studio 20, and I ask them what their questions are. It's got to be their agenda, because they're already interested.
So. I have a question for you about Studio 20, and I've been meaning to ask you this. Why is it called Studio 20?
Well,
why not Studio 19 or Studio
20? 20 simply refers to our address, 20 Cooper Square.
Oh, there you go.
See? And the reason it's called Studio 20 is I was trying to bring the studio method of instruction, which is more common in the arts, into journalism education, because in studio courses like in painting, if you go to college for an MFA in painting or graphic design or architecture, you take studio courses, and everybody has projects. The instructor has projects. The students have projects. They work on projects together. Visiting professionals come in, like you, who always have projects. And I wanted to bring that project awareness into journalism education. The other reason is that if we don't name it for a platform or a genre of journalism, like magazine journalism or science journalism or broadcast journalism or documentary, then it can be anything, and we can continually reinvent it.
No, it makes perfect sense. I kind of understood the studio part. I did not get the 20 part, though. So I'm glad.
Just the lightest possible branding I could think of.
No, it's a good branding. You know, we may, you know, to everybody that's listening, we always try to come up with a list of things that we're going to talk about before we actually do the podcast. And I just realized while we were talking that we left out something that we really ought to talk about that we haven't talked about yet. I don't think we've ever talked about it, is the difficulty that we've been having actually producing the podcast. I think that's a topic that's at least worth mentioning. You know, my comment on that, my editorial comment on that is that, well, podcasting really became a very big thing 6 years ago. It's been around. And at the outset, we had much better tools for creating podcasts than we have now. It's, you know, like my doctor, you know, if I go to my doctor and I say, oh, he says you gained 2 pounds, and I say, well, but it's only 2 pounds. And he says, yeah, but it's the wrong direction, you know. I mean, things should be getting better, not worse. And the podcast tools should be getting better. And in fact, there's been a lot of degradation. And I don't know why it is that way or why, you know, I don't know how to put it. It feels to me like the blogging tools vendors just simply don't care about podcasting. Yeah. It's just not something that they want to support or particularly like or understand or whatever. But I think we've missed the last 3 shows on our WordPress blog. They just don't go through in the RSS feed.
And they don't go to subscribers, you mean?
Yeah. I mean, which is kind of why we do this, right? I mean, it's fun. I love talking with you, Jay, but I really like the idea that people could listen to it, too, you know?
Right. Well, the blog software, people need to realize this because podcasting is an essential part of the blogging tool set.
Yeah.
And it deserves a lot of respect, in my opinion.
Yeah, me too. I mean, you know, the philosophy that drove blogging in the beginning was just a relentless effort to simplify, to make it more accessible so more people could do it. And it's something that you have to have a constant vigilance for. I said in an email to one of the vendors that I feel about podcasting the way Steve Jobs feels about the iPhone. You know, that mm-hmm. you know, I wish that I could just cut off apps, you know, like the way you can do it. Say, well, sorry, WordPress, you don't get to pretend to be a podcasting tool because you completely suck at it. And honestly, I would say the same thing about the rest of them. I haven't found one yet that's any good at it. They all sort of have features for it, but the features are all hacks and sort of temporary little things they did in a weekend. And, you know, the real solution would require focus and thought and a little bit of user testing and refinement and, you know, iteration. It wouldn't take very much time. And I've offered to work with them, too. So that offer is going out in general to anybody listening who makes a blogging tool. You could have our podcast. We would host your podcast on your blogging tool if it met a couple of criteria. One is both Jay and I have to be able to use it, which means, you know, Jay, it has to be something that's reasonably familiar. I mean, Jay, you already know how to use WordPress and what else do you know how to use? Tumblr and Posterous?
I do Tumblr, sure. Yeah.
Posterous? Have you ever used Posterous?
Yes, I use Posterous.
So anything and you would probably be willing to learn something new if you had to, would you?
Sure, if it's designed for a general user.
Right, exactly. And what I need to be able to do is to somehow, I need to be able to give Jay the URL of an MP3 file that I've put some metadata onto and uploaded to Amazon S3. And Jay will have that URL. Ideally, there would be a place in the user interface where Jay would just paste the URL in, and then that would become the enclosure in the RSS feed. And from there, there's really nothing more to it. It has to have titles, too.
Yeah, title.
Yeah, it has to have a title because every one of
these... Date, title.
Pardon me?
A date would be good.
Oh, for sure. Then that would be equate to in the feed to the pub date element. I'm not sure that there's anything else it needs to have. And then basically we would be your customer, your happy customer for life. And we would sing your praises far and wide. Jay and I are both hopefully very influential. And or we hope we're very influential.
Anyway. We should give a little shout out to Blog Talk Radio because they have served us well in the way that we do the show.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the fallback. Everybody says, well, I could always subscribe to the Blog Talk Radio feed, to which I say, yeah, you could, but then you don't get the wonderful fidelity of the beautiful MP3 that we produce in the studio, you know, and you can't hear all the subtle little nuances and, you know, sniffs and stuff like that. All the work Adrian does is for a lot. Adrian's crying in the corner right now.
Well, what I want to stress is that ease of use is directly related to participation, and that's why it's such a simple, such an important issue.
Yep.
Is when we engineer better solutions to ease of use, we're making participation by more people possible.
Right.
And the more people who participate, the better the rebooted system of news gets.
Well, that's what you were talking about in Austin today, right? I mean, this whole idea that the news industry is not preparing for the participatory news industry, you know, news system, and neither is the tech industry.
Right. Well, that gets to my South by Southwest.
Let's go there. Let's go there,
as it were.
Yep.
And the first thing that struck me after I got here and got settled and got my credentials and everything was that it's a different kind of conference because it's not a tech industry conference at all. There is a room with the vendors, and they have their booths, like at a trade show.
They have their boobs?
But it's not something that anyone has even mentioned to me once while I've been here.
Really? Really?
And the vendors have a presence, but it's not about them at all. And anthropologically, I think, what's interesting about it is that it really is a gathering of a tribe, the internet tribe. And the participants are not the companies that dominate the technology side or the stars, you know, like a Jason Calacanis or a Robert Scoble or something like that who is here. It's just all the people who work on the internet and not just work but make their passions into sites, and who have made the internet part of their life, and they come from all over, but there's also kind of a map of the United States where we know there are more of them, and they're all here. So, you know, there's a big San Francisco presence, there's a big New York presence, as you would expect, but also Seattle, Austin itself, Los Angeles, Boston, and the Triangle area of North Carolina, and these places where internet living is denser, you know, are more represented. But it really is a tribe of people who ordinarily connect through the internet coming together. 15,000 people at this conference. I couldn't believe it when I heard that figure. And I'm not used to having to show up at panel events 25 minutes before it starts just to get in. I wanted to presentation on the Ten Commandments of User Interaction, which is something that I'm much more and more interested in every day,
uh-huh.
And I don't know really much about it at all.
Why did you have to show up?
I wanted to learn about it, but I couldn't get in.
I don't know if he can hear me. Can you hear me, Jay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, okay, because I tried to jump in with a question.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's all right. Why did you have to show up 25 minutes early?
Because there are too many people trying to get into these huge ballroom sessions.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. And they closed it because the room had reached capacity.
And how many people were at your session?
Well, our session, which was today at 9:30, was well attended. I was really pleased. It was a huge room, and we almost filled it. We didn't quite, so anybody who came got in. But it was really a very good crowd, and I was very pleased by that.
What did you talk about, Jay?
Well, it was called The Future of Context. And it was about this problem that we've discussed on the show before, of the new system that delivers the update without the background necessary to understand the update. Mm. And by the future of context, which was the phrase from Matt Thompson of NPR, who was the organizer of the conference and a brilliant young news intellectual. The other panelist was Tristan Harris, who's the 25-year-old CEO engineer of a company called Apture, which makes it really easy to embed contextual information and reference information in a page without leaving the page. And then Stacey Kramer, Paid Content, was the moderator. And our subject was, well, how do we fix this flaw in the news system where we don't deliver you the background to understand the river of news at the same time, even though we could, because the web makes that possible.
Now that's right up your alley, isn't it? That's your
Yeah. So one of the things I learned, and this is something that I know you've thought about, is the old-fashioned panel, you know, doesn't work that well anymore. And the availability of a back channel during conferences, namely Twitter, to talk about what's going on during a panel has really raised the bar for a panel because people come in and they're expecting a lot more than the traditional conference panel has provided. And if you're going to do one, you really have to plan much more carefully and provide a lot more value. So what we did is Matt created a site called thefutureofcontext.com, which our listener can go to, with all kinds of background and links to things that we've done before on this subject, as well as it's a WordPress blog that you can actually add your own post to, and it has comment threads at each post, and it's a primer for this discussion, as well as a place to go after the discussion. And then Matt, myself, and Tristan, all at our separate sites, essentially blogged what we were going to say ahead of time. I had mined up a week before the panel and have been gathering reactions and comments that I incorporated into what I said. And the preparation was really essential. Then we really carefully prepared how we were going to use the web during the session and showed key sites sort of taking turns on the laptops so that they were coming up in context. And finally, Stacey Kramer, our moderator, was totally on the Twitter feed during the panel and feeding in questions from it, as well as tweeting during the panel and retweeting important comments so that people outside the room could pick up on it. And it was just like five times as much as you do for a regular old panel where you just set up the microphones and welcome everybody.
A couple of comments. So you were basically...
You have to do better than we used to.
You were competing with the back channel in a sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And one other thing, I've been tweeting while you were talking, FYI. So it's kind of... And reading the tweets too. One of these days we'll actually get interactive. If anyone's listening to this live right now and happens to be on Twitter, send me a message. Let's see what you got to say. That was fascinating. So what did you come up with? I mean, what is the future of context?
Well, one of the conclusions I came up with from the event was that we really have to, and I said this on Twitter afterwards, we have to start populating the frontier where game design and explanatory journalism meet. And I don't know how, because I don't know enough about game design. It's not my field. But I know that there's something there that that will bring results. And one of the interesting things about this panel was maybe half to a third of the people there were programmers, and maybe a third were journalists.
Really?
Yeah. And a third were everybody else. And that mix of people was itself interesting and important. But I really think because game design is inherently accessible to people at different levels of the game, this is what the new system needs to become. Because if you have been following along in a story, the update means one thing. If you haven't been, the latest news means something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing I'd like to see. The other conclusion I had from this discussion was that the walls are coming down in journalism. And the people in the news industry know that they are just part of a larger conversation now. And the really good ones aren't fighting that anymore. And that's a very good sign.
Well, what's interesting, I've sort of come to the same conclusion. But I think that the journalists should fight it a little bit, Jay. What led me to it was seeing that PBS announced that one of their series was going to debut on Facebook. It was going to actually appear on Facebook before it appeared, you know, on their distribution system, which is, you know, the PBS network.
Really? I didn't see that.
Yeah. And maybe I misread it, but I don't think so. And the mistake that I think they're making when they do that is that they're thinking of Facebook as sort of a medium, and Facebook is that for sure, but it's also owned by one company, and and that company can tilt the playing field in any direction that they want to. You know, maybe with PBS it's not such an issue because it's non-commercial, but I've really felt and CNN actually said this last week. It came out, I think one of the executives of CNN said it, that they see Facebook as a much more serious competitor than they do Fox News. And I think that's right. I think the Facebook.
What does that mean exactly? I'm not quite sure I understand.
Well, okay. Well, he said, first of all, in terms of numbers, there might be like 2 or 3 million people on Fox and 400 or 500 million on Facebook.
Oh, sure. No comparison.
The scale is just way different.
Yes.
And that, I don't know what he meant, but I know what I mean, is that, you know, in a sense, these news networks are both the content. See, that's where I think they're making a mistake. They see themselves as just the content, but they're not just the content. They're also the distribution system for that content. And they are very aware of that in other contexts, that they are mm-hmm. that, because that's how they get to be gatekeepers. That's why when you and I argue with Jake Tapper on Twitter, which we were both doing,
yeah.
I wanted to ask you about that too, by the way. But when we argue about that, well, Jake Tapper has got a lot, even though both of us have more followers than Jake Tapper, and certainly put together, we would swamp him. You know, don't mistake that for the fact that Jake Tapper is a very big name in news and about as polite as Jason Ponton is. I thought the guy was a bit of a lout. And I really was offended the way he was treating you, Jay. And so I came to your defense because I think that
he was
being very dismissive of you. And I know the point you were making. And it can be hard to hear that point if you're not listening. And I don't think he wanted to listen. What they were saying, you know, on the Washington Post, Harold Raines, is that who it was who...
Raines, that opinion piece.
Yeah, former New York Times managing editor or editor-in-chief. Said basically, why aren't serious journalists kicking Fox News out of the club of serious journalists? I mean, that's the way I read it. You know?
Right, that's what he said.
Yeah, and good question. Jake Tapper explains, well, hey, I'm one of the good guys. Okay, Jake, maybe you are one of the good guys, but why don't you answer the question? Why do you treat Fox News as if they were journalists when Fox News is not a journalist? I think the problem for Jake Tapper is that really, if you cut right down to it, Jake Tapper isn't a journalist either. And so that's probably why he doesn't want to answer the question.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but he had said in a White House briefing, he had asked the press secretary why the White House was criticizing a sister news organization, which he meant Fox News.
Tapper said that?
Yes, and that's why brought him up in the first place in connection with that column.
Oh.
Because he had described Fox as a sister news organization. And then he went on to explain later on, when he did get a lot of flack for that statement, because people were saying, why did you say that, Jake? What did you mean by that? So what he said he meant was that they are certified to be part of the White House press corps. You know, they have press passes, in other words, which is true. They do. And so he's asking Robert Gibbs, the press secretary to Obama, why is the White House saying Fox isn't a real news organization when it's certified to cover the White House?
So that seems like a fair question, actually.
But the sister
news organization thing, though, is also raises another question. But
it's a fair question. I think it's fair for the White House to criticize Fox. I think it's fair for Tapper to ask his question. And I think it's fair for us to criticize Tapper for calling Fox a sister news organization and ask him what he meant.
Agree with all of that. Now, how would you feel if the White House took away their press credentials, Fox's press credentials?
Well, this is one of the things that Jake was sliding over. The White House doesn't give out credentials. The White House Press Correspondents Association does.
It's
handled by peers.
That's a good idea for the White House not to get involved in that one. That allows them to say things like
this.
Yeah,
you wouldn't
really
want them involved in that.
No, that's good.
So anyway, that's what that little episode was about. And Jake is a very aggressive reporter in responding to any criticism or what he perceives as a slight, which is, I guess, is better than not responding at all.
Yeah, well, he did some really...
I occasionally have these tussles with him.
He gave me a hard time for being rude to him when he was being pretty damn rude to you. Let's switch to another topic. I wanted to do a follow-up on our Thursday evening meetups. Because I know you weren't there on Thursday.
Yes, and, I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, it went phenomenally well on Thursday. And after the one we had done a few weeks earlier had been rough. And my theory on why it had been a bit rough was that I had sort of said, okay, here, read this. And that was the guidelines for the BloggerCon format, which I see as second nature, but I forgot that I had 2 or 3 years within which to evolve that format and got to try a lot of false starts and take, you know, basically it was a living document for a while. It's no longer that. It's more or less frozen. And so what I had expected was to throw that over to the group and say, here, this is what we're going to do on Thursday. And it should have come as no surprise that, you know, it's a lot to swallow. So what we tried this last Thursday instead was to do a very small but very important subset of the format. And that was basically listening and speaking. Those are the two. That's because ultimately that's the core of what is supposed to happen in a in a discussion, in a BloggerCon discussion, or for that matter, in a, you know, in a classroom that's run using the Socratic method. It's you know, the point is that people feel that they are participants as opposed to you know, audience members, which is
so. Who were the participants? Where were they? What points in the compass were they coming from?
Oh, interesting question. Well, let's see. Jeremy Zeilar. I'm going to try going around the room and see if I can remember all the names. I can't, of course. Jeremy Zeilar from the New York Times. Steve Smith, who's a venture capitalist. It'll come to me. Then next was Matilda.
From Studio 20,
whose last name I think she'll forgive me for not trying to pronounce. Who was to her? I think it was Chris Anderson was next, who's from CUNY and Yale and the as a journalism professor. He had a fascinating story. Basically, everybody told a story and then led a discussion on their story. So Jeremy's story was, he went first since he was sitting to my left. His story was about how as a child, his first memory was being in a fire, and he told the story. It was fascinating. And after that, Steve Smith, talked about, something economical, something having to do with economics. The woman whose name I'm blanking on right now told a story about her dog's final year of life. It was phenomenal. Chris Anderson talked about a hero who, a free speech hero, I don't remember his name, who died in a Mexico school strike and filmed his own death. Very moving story. Then editor of the Columbia Journalism Review, I don't recall his name.
Justin?
Probably. You know, I'm bad with
Mike
names.
Mike Hoyt?
Yeah,
Justin Peters.
Probably that sounds about right. I don't. Yeah, he told a story about a. I'm not going to go through all of them. There's too many. There's about 15, but I'll just stop with. I'll end with this one. He told a story about a moderator of a discussion group who deleted a message. This was a guy in the St. Louis newspaper. Somebody had left something snarky and. I think everybody in the room agreed that he was, I certainly agreed, that he was within his rights to delete the message. But then he got the guy fired. And then he wrote a story about how he got the guy fired, which all of which seemed to be over the line. Yeah, and we also had people from the Wall Street Journal, Jonathan Glick, who is an entrepreneur, New York tech entrepreneur, told a great story. My friend Matt Terenzio, who's a programmer from Connecticut, was a really interesting group of people, and the reason it worked was there was a lot of storytelling, and people really listened, and there were discussions on each one, so everybody got a chance to be a discussion leader, And that was the secret. That's something we never did in the Berkman meetings, by the way. I never felt that it was necessary or even, and probably would have been a great idea. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have done it. We probably should have. But this was new ground, that, you know, have a room where everybody gets the discussion leader role, and, you know, and then everybody gets to see somebody else's rendition of being a discussion leader. So some people were better at it, and some people were, you know, not so great, but everybody got to see a lot of different ways of doing it. And so there was general agreement that we ought to do this again next week, and that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to do a repeat of exactly the same format. However, we don't have to do that, and that was a bit of progress, because there were probably, four or five separate stories or little pieces of the stories, each of which could have taken a half-hour discussion to examine all the facets of it. And we seem to be gravitating towards the media hacker. It would be that it still seems to be the center of what's going on here. That it's
media hacking. Good. I like that.
It's,
I think,
journalism.
That should be the focus.
Yeah, it's journalism and technology and platforms. It's
right.
What we do here. It really is sort of like a little microcosm or a bigger cosm of what we're doing here on this podcast. You know, it's the same
macrocosm.
Well,
I may lose you in a minute because I think my phone is running out of juice, and if it does, I'll try and call back on the other line. But I like media hacking as the convergence point.
Yeah, yeah, it seems to work. So, don't leave me, Jay. I mean, I was just about out of. He said, I'm looking at.
No, you have the iPod discussion that you wanted to.
Oh, iPad, actually.
iPad, yeah.
Did you say iPod? I think you did, which I think a lot of people will do.
Right.
Yeah. Well, okay, yes, I do. And also, what else I have here is the annual report from Pew.
Right.
Yeah, and Seed.com. Those are the other things on our list.
Oh, yeah, Seed.com.
Talk about Seed.com a little bit. Tell us about Seed.com.
Well, we talked about it earlier on this podcast. Seed, which is a division of AOL that is trying to bring sort of a new economy, new efficiency to freelance journalism, tried an experiment here at AOL. They tried to get all 2,000 bands that are here at South by Southwest written up by a volunteer, and they were paying $50 per interview per band.
Mm-hmm.
And they just recruited people from South by Southwest or Austin or anyone around the area who wanted to do this. And they basically succeeded. They basically got about 1,800 assigned. There was about 100 bands that couldn't make it, and there was about 50 or 60 they couldn't find initially that they eventually tracked down. And they're using this online assignment desk system to do this without flooding the Seed editors with work. And they showed me the system, and it's very close to what we're trying to design at Studio 20 and the open source assignment desk, except that it's proprietary, of course, and it belongs to AOL. But it's just a successful attempt to organize a huge act of content production with more than 1,000 people involved in essentially one story, which is covering all the bands at South by Southwest. And I just think it's emblematic of where the new system is going, so I wanted to report on that.
Mm-hmm. So it worked.
It worked, yeah. I mean, I don't know if we'd have to look at the quality and look at really carefully at how good it was, but it certainly met a certain baseline standard of quality, and a lot of it depends on where it goes from here, like what they do with that material, but I think they wanted to demonstrate that you could do it, and Tim Armstrong, the CEO of AOL, is very interested in this experiment, and it was a good way to sort of kick off this system. Of course, the pay, $50, is still low compared to freelance rates, but it's high compared to blogging, you know, for yourself.
Yeah. Well, it's not just also... I think it will be its success will be measured based on what happens in the future. Is this a seed for, you know, will each of the band's pages here develop into something, you know, that's reflected?
Right, exactly.
I mean, that's probably why they call it seed.com, right?
And will it become a kind of Wikipedia for music baseline?
Right. Yeah, I'm sure that's where they're intending it to go.
Yeah.
Jay, I just got a message from somebody saying that they can only hear one of us, and I'm not sure which one. This is somebody who's
listening. Yeah, I saw that message, too. I don't know if that was true just at the beginning, but if it were,
that was left 14 minutes ago.
We would have heard more than once.
Well, I think in case it's you, let me just say this. If you're listening to this and you can hear me, but you can't hear Jay, then go to rebootnews.com in about an hour or two and download the MP3 that we upload there, because I think you'll be able to hear both of us there. You should now say the same thing, Jay, in case I'm the guy they can't hear.
Yeah, if you can only hear me and you can't hear Dave, you should go to rebootnews.com later on, and we'll have the full podcast for you, and it should have both voices.
That was funny. Adrian's sitting here shaking his head going, what the frack did I do wrong? You know, I don't think actually it could really be that serious a problem, because you can hear me and I can hear you, right? And if we can hear each other, I've got to figure something's going out on the Blog Talk Radio channel. Anyway, I don't know. So what else did we want to talk about? Oh, the iPad.
iPad.
Oh, my God. What a mess. Well, the iPad was available for pre-order as of 8:30 a.m. Eastern time.
Right. You're going to get one, right?
Well, yes. I was going to tell you the whole story with a little bit of suspense, but if you insist, I'll go right to the punchline. Well, it's all right. I think it, anyway, so I'll pretend you didn't just blow my little story. But so at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time on Friday, which happens to be just about when I woke up, and turns out that's when you could pre-order. And so I, you know, filled in the form. I had to, it had been a long time since I ordered anything through the Apple store, so I had to give them a new credit card, and I had to enter my New York shipping address because that's where I wanted to be delivered to, and got all the way through the whole thing, picked out the model I wanted and whatever, and then I couldn't actually hit the submit button. It was like, my finger didn't work. And so I went through this whole hesitation. I actually wrote a blog post.
Really?
Yeah, that said, me and the iPad, not now. I had decided as of Friday morning that I would just let it go, you know, that I wasn't going to be in the first wave. Because what hit me was this, is that I don't really know what the iPad is, Jay. I mean, you know, and I don't buy other things. When I buy something online, I usually look at the Amazon reviews for it first, and I see what other people have said about it. And if the consensus, I never buy anything that gets anything less than 4 out of 5 stars. It just simply doesn't happen. And if they talk about too many problems and glitches and whatnot, I just don't buy it, you know. So that's the first thing. And there are no reviews of this because nobody has actually reviewed one yet.
Right.
Right. It's just simply not out there. It's not available for review. And then I got an iPhone, one of the very first iPhones made or sold, thanks to Robert Scoble, who waited in line overnight at the Palo Alto Apple store. He was allowed to buy a certain number, and he bought me one, and I, of course, gave him the money. And that first iPhone had a lot of problems, Jay. I mean, it was not a very good product. I mean, most glaringly, it didn't take a standard headphone. You had to use one of their headphones, and I don't like their headphones. My ears and their headphones don't agree. They just don't work in my ears. I know other people like them, but they keep falling out of my ears. There's something weird about my ears, or something weird about their headphones. I would prefer to say there's something weird about their headphones, right? So who knows what the problems are with this thing? So then I slept on it, and I noticed that Andrew Barron, a friend of mine who does Rocket Boom and a number of other, Know Your Meme, and Actually, I want to get him in the loop on some of the Studio 20 stuff we're doing because they're doing an interesting project called The Human Wire, which we'll I'm sure we'll talk about at some point. Anyway, he posted a thing on Facebook saying that that he just invested some of his Apple winnings. He plays Apple stock market. Invested some of his winnings in buying an iPad. And that swayed me big time because Apple stock's been very, very good to me too. And
yeah.
So when you think about it in balance, I can afford to do it. I could even afford to waste the money if I needed to. And so I said, oh, what the hell? And I went ahead and bought it. Literally 10 minutes after buying it, I read an article from PC World that said anybody who buys an iPad is an idiot. And, you know, I read the article and I went, you know, this guy's right. I mean, it's like, for all the reasons I just said, he said anybody that actually puts down the money and buys this thing sight unseen, you know, ought to have their head examined. And I raise my hand and volunteer. I take the fifth, plead no contest. I'm absolutely out of my mind, but I did it.
Wow.
So on April
2nd. Well, I can't wait to hear what you do with it. And I know my phone is losing its battery, so I'm going to have to say goodbye. We're going to have to end this
okay.
sooner than I thought because I'm going to barely hear you now.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, okay, I'm going to miss you, Jay. Have a great rest of South by Southwest, and say hi to everybody for me.
I certainly will. And Dave, as always, it's a pleasure doing the show with you.
Okay, thanks, Jay. All right.
Bye for now.
Okay, I have one more story for you, and 3 minutes to go. And I'll sort of pretend that Jay is still there. This is a story about a student here at NYU. Her name is Jessica Roy. And I'm sure if Jessica's listening to this, her ears are probably burning. Even if she's not listening to it, I'm sure her ears are burning. And Jessica wrote a blog post. Well, actually, back up a second. She sent me an email saying she wants to move to California. She graduates in May. Wanted to know if I could make any recommendations of places she should look for work. And I said, no, I'm probably not a good person to ask for that, but if you find any work, let me know, and I'll let you know what I think of the place, or I'll network for you, and we'll find somebody who can tell you about it. That I can do, and that I'm good at doing. So then she sent me a blog post a few days later that said, I'm Jessica, or something, I'm paraphrasing, I'm Jessica, this is why you should hire me. And it was absolutely beautifully written post, very, very, very persuasive. And so I did what I would do really for anybody. Now, Jessica is very accomplished and I think very talented, gifted new journalist in that she runs, along with Lily Quaitman, she runs the blog here called NYU Local. And NYU Local is a student-run, completely independent of NYU, blog that covers the NYU community and covers the East Village and does it with a kind of snarky, college student attitude. But it's very, very useful. I saw the value in it off the bat. And I've read about a dozen articles on this blog that were all, some cases got me a great email address at nyu.edu, gave me some ideas about things that the university did that I had no idea that they do. It's just a great publication. And so what I did was I pushed that link to all my Twitter followers. And then it got picked up by Hacker News at Y Combinator. And next time I saw her, she was like all, said she had gotten all these inquiries and had all these interviews set up. And I just wanted to tell that story because, first of all, take a look at Jessica if you're interested in somebody who knows how to market, because this woman knows how to market at almost an intuitive level. But also to say to anybody that has a goal and is looking for a way to accomplish it, that sometimes the simplest way to do it is, number one, just be very clear about what it is you're looking for. Number two, don't be bashful about it. Write a blog post about it. And number three, get distribution for the idea. Look for key influencers. Look for somebody who has flow, who can get you some attention. And Now, it's not always going to work, but, you know, the way you need to look at it, and I can't tell you what Jessica's process was, but, you know, it can't hurt. That's sort of the way to look at it. So that was the story. I wanted to get it, and we did it. We filled the time, and we got about 3 seconds left, and that's it for this edition of Rebooting the News. Thanks, everybody. See you again next week.